Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 61. I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Marcia from Los Angeles.
Josh from Los Angeles.
Peter from Glendale.
Alright. This week we have very little news. The only thing I have is that FX is producing a pilot called Powers, which is... I'm sorry, I'm laughing because one of our guests perked up because that's their last name. The show is about a police force that investigates people with superpowers.
Well, yeah, it's a graphic novel. It's really good.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. Very good. Well, apparently FX is making that happen, so I think maybe cool. The fall. And one of the stars is Charles S. Dutton, who I really like.
Oh, I like him. Yeah, cool. Oh,
cool. I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how he feels.
But that's the only real news I have about TV, but next week that is going to change dramatically because we have the upfronts starting. And so...
Yay.
Well, it's yay and dread. I have a weird combination because a lot of my shows are on the bubble. So I've already been hit, I feel, by too many of my shows being canceled, so I'm already depressed. Anyway... let's move on to the shows. We're trying to keep this quick.
Sorry.
Stop laughing. It could happen. The first thing we're going to talk about is Doctor Who, because we didn't get to talk about it last week because it airs on Saturday, so we're kind of a week behind. Oh, actually, we are exactly a week behind. Okay, so this is
we are a week behind, yes.
Exactly. This is the second episode of Doctor Who, the second part of the two-parter. And it basically dealt with, all of a sudden we're 3 months in time forward, and everybody's got these hash marks all over their faces, and what the heck? So what'd you guys think?
And they're being hunted down by Mark Shepard.
Yes. Evil Mark Shepard.
Rather brutally, too.
Well, yes, he was shooting everyone, and at least he thought he was, and then you find out he's actually on our side. I didn't like the jump forward 3 months.
I didn't like the first episode when you realized that the second episode was so good and explained. It was like the first wasted about 30 minutes of my life. They could have made that shorter. It was as if they were making the first episode be a big honking tease. And the second episode was actually quality and explained everything and was interesting.
That was kind of the point of the first episode.
To waste 30 minutes of my life?
No, to be a teaser, I think.
To make a big tease for the second episode.
I just thought that the second episode went a lot smoother. It was a better quality, better story writing than the first one was.
I agree, yeah.
I guess I felt like my feeling was, wasn't necessarily that I thought it was a big tease, more that I didn't like the idea of them breaking up their two episodes, their big premiere, over 2 weeks. I feel like by the end of the second episode, I was like, okay, I'm ready for a new season of Doctor Who. Whereas, I would agree, the first episode, I was kind of like, I kind of felt like I saw half of something, and it wasn't very satisfying. I think I've said this before on the podcast, and I'm a person who actually doesn't have cable, and I watched the premiere with Libya, and I agree, I thought that the commercials were really annoying. So what I do, because I don't have cable, is I watch it on iTunes, and on iTunes, you can watch it in HD for 99 cents, which is, what, $7? And there's no commercials. So even if I had cable, I would pay the $7 just to see a better... I mean, it's awesome watching it that way. So anyways, that was all I wanted to add.
I wanted to say, what did you guys think about River Song and the end and Amy and all of that, all the conjecture?
I feel like I like the episode overall, but... I do kind of felt like at the end of the episode, I wanted some kind of recognition to the fact that we know of the doctor supposedly is going to die in a certain period of time. And I know they can't tell the doctor, but I guess I kind of wanted some kind of little team meeting, like, what are we going to do about the doctor? Blah, blah, blah. And like,
they did that in the first episode. It's been done.
I know
they said
now,
exactly
yeah,
what they're going to do.
Kind of, I mean,
it's not kind
of. It feels to me
but
like
you don't want, you don't want to like overhype, you don't want to harp on that whole thing too much, because it really is like the deep dark secret that's in the back of everybody's head. So like you don't want it to become like Rose, where the doc or somebody just has to keep bringing that subject up.
Yeah, I don't think you need, because I think that was actually part of the issue that I had with last season with the crack in time. They talked about it every episode and it got to be annoying. I'd rather be like, okay, we know that the doctor's dying, we're good.
But it's still 200 years in the future.
Right.
So that's 200 years of watching the show. So I'm fine with letting it go for right now.
I also, what about the kid at the end who regenerates? What the heck?
That brings up like a little thing that really kind of bugs me, because I noticed when Rory was talking to Amy about whether she had feelings for the doctor, she kind of evaded him. And now this kid, who is supposedly hers, regenerates. I'm like, okay, are we setting up that she had a thing with the doctor at some point?
I don't believe that. That's all red herring.
I think that's what we're supposed to think, but I don't think it's that. I think it's something better.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's something better, because like, if it turns out that Amy and the doctor did have a thing, I'm going to be forced to hate her forever.
Forced to?
I don't see the doctor feeling that way about her. In
the first episode, they did a good job of establishing when she said something like, you know, you're my best friend, not my lover type of thing. I feel like they nipped that in the bud, that they were like, all right, moving forward,
but
getting rid of that.
Stephen Moffat is somebody who really works with subtlety and will just like throw a little thing in here that completely throws what you thought was the case totally on its end. And one thing that I noticed was, she had this affectation for Rory, which was calling him Stupid Face, which is a horrible nickname. But I also noticed, and this was going back to the first episode and rewatching it and scrutinizing it because I'm crazy that way, when the doctor gets killed and Amy freaks out and starts screaming and crying, she calls the doctor Stupid Face.
Oh. Yeah, I thought she was lying about that too when she told Rory that he was Stupid Face. I didn't believe it necessarily. But the thing is, we know that Amy has a thing for the doctor. That's established, but the doctor very much has no interest in her. He has zero interest in her.
I think that the girl is a red herring in her own self. I think that we're going to find out about 6 episodes in, just when they do the break. We're going to get a little bit more information on her. I don't think she's even going to be mentioned. You know, the questions that come out on the net are, well, who is she and what is she? Wouldn't it be funny if she was actually the master come back again?
I doubt that.
I know. Oh, you know, but that's, it's just, it, but the idea is that anything we say, we really have nothing to base it on. So I think we should put her aside and let's talk about the silent. Because the way the words were written in the script, there's the silence, which is all of them. There's the silent, which is one of them. And then there's the silence, which is a few of them. Now, I think that what's under the earth, the ship, that's not theirs either. Because remember, it was said they make nothing. They make the beings that they are living off of do work. And they did not make the humans make that machine. So that means that that machine from the Lodger episode, which the doctor mentioned, he realized
it looks like the same
ship.
Yeah,
yeah. That is going to be something.
I just realized if the silence are influencing the beings on Earth, and this is underground and built by somebody else, it was the Silurians.
Oh yeah, it could be them. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what that is.
Because don't bring back the Silurians.
That's the guys we met in the Hungry Earth. Those people that were also under the earth for thousands of years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
My reaction exactly.
But, yeah, anyway, we need to wrap this up and move on. But it was still a good episode. They left a lot of stuff hanging in a good way. Mm-hmm. And so now
to give Moffat credit for just being able to create really creepy villains.
Yeah, that's true.
Like the Weeping Angels and now the Silence. He's 2 for 2.
Yeah, those are good. I don't think he said that they were as good as the Weeping Angels. They're not quite. Like I'm not as afraid of them, but
I'm not as freaked out by them as I was by the Weeping Angels in Blink, the season 5 2-parter. I wasn't as freaked out by them as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this is sort of like between that.
But all right, let's move on to Game of Thrones episode 3. Episode 3. 3. Yeah. what the heck happened in episode 3?
Oh, let's see.
John and Tyrion go to Castle Black.
Right, they go to the wall. Right. And so there's John's training.
Right.
I think that the story is moving along at a decent pace. Like, I feel like, actually, it feels a little fast.
I don't know if I agree with that, because this is only 10 episodes.
Right.
So where we are now in episode 3, I'm like, okay, we're keeping decent pace, because they're going to have to slow down the pace for, like, the second half, because a lot of stuff happens.
Ah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
But I did think that Jon Snow is doing a really good job of, they're showing how he's acclimating to life at the wall and his disappointment and the bullying. I think that they're doing a really good job of the shorthand of all the stuff that happened to him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, thumbs up.
Yeah, I love that. I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to meet Samwell this week.
Samwell.
His buddy at the wall, the really wussy kid.
Oh, right. The one that was getting picked on and stuff.
Yeah.
They didn't show him. But,
this episode was mostly about Jon and Tyrion bonding, which I thought was done superbly.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And his uncle.
And then we have Ned and the Lannisters down in King's Landing. And that first scene between Ned and Jaime was fantastic.
Yeah, that was great. I agree.
Yeah, he's like, yes, your armor is very pretty. No one's put any scratch marks on it. And he's like, oh, you choose your enemies wisely.
Mm-hmm. That was so great.
Yeah, that was... though, of course... never mind. I almost gave something away.
Yeah, no.
But...
Yeah, I'm like trying to hold my tongue on certain things, because I actually finished the book last week.
Wow.
I haven't started to read the book yet. I'm actually holding off until I get about halfway through the season, and then I'm going to go halfway through the book, because I like being able to watch the show without knowing what's in the book, so that I won't be disappointed, or like sometimes you go, well, they had to drop this, they had to drop that.
But I'm actually not disappointed. I think they're doing a fantastic job.
No, me either. I think what they're dropping makes sense, and what they're doing to make up for it in more subtle TV ways just really works.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think they're doing a great job.
I like what they're doing with the youngest daughter.
Oh, Arya.
Oh, Arya? Oh, yes. God, I love Arya. And yay, they brought in Syrio this week, and yeah. I loved him. They did him perfectly.
I was just going to say that. He was exactly how I pictured him. That was great.
Yeah. That was probably my favorite part of the episode, was the end. I really liked that character.
And not just that, but the way the father smiled. You look at the eyes, and you realize that he realizes, this is my daughter, but she's stronger than my sons. This is someone who's doing what she wants because she wants to, while the others, that's how they were raised. She has an instinct for swordplay, and he sees it. And I think he's, even though I don't know the future of the show, that's why I don't want to read the book yet.
Well, he sees it, but like what I took away from that ending was like when he's watching her sparring with Syrio, and like he's sort of seeing their wooden swords become real swords. Like I sort of saw like fear in his eyes. Like this is what Arya is going to become.
Right. He was proud at first and saw how good she was, but then he realized what her fate was going to be.
Right.
So
that was such a fantastically well done scene.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. Peter, you haven't spoken much. What do you think?
No, I pretty much agree. I really like the ending, and I have not read the book. So, you know, my biggest issue with Game of Thrones has been that I feel too many, and I've said this before, I feel too many times the characters are such archetypes, they feel like they're written in all caps, you know, like everything is like, I am this, you know, but as the show's gone on, I've, you know, gotten to like the character, except for Stark. I think Stark's been pretty, Stark and Dinklage's character. But as the show's going on, I've liked it. I'm still hoping that there's a show that we're going to talk about later that I'm not going to talk about because I just finished the first season, which is Justified. I feel like a show like Justified does a much better job of giving me antagonists that I find charismatic and interesting, but also a threat to the main character. I feel like on Game of Thrones, the Sarah Connor girl and stuff, it's like it's still too broad for me. I just wish they were a little more grounded or something, a little more like, it's not that they have to be likable, it's more like I wish I I saw her point of view and could kind of agree with her in some way. And I feel like sometimes the villains on Game of Thrones are just too easily like, well, this guy's just a jerk. Like the dragon kid.
He's pretty much a jerk.
He's just a jerk. You know, and it's just not interesting. I'm just like, ugh. But whatever. I really like the end of Arya.
I think Cersei's will be interesting for you. I agree that the dragon boy is, he's a jerk. There's nothing else.
He's a jerk through and through. Yeah. But the flip side of that is I love the sister, Daenerys.
Yeah, she's starting to get interesting. Like, she did the whole...
Can I also say, just from like a guy point of view, finally seeing her in a Dothraki gear, totally hot.
Yeah, I like that she's finally getting some backbone, and that's really advancing her character.
And having just finished the book and knowing where it's going, I'm really excited.
Yeah, and I would agree. I like her too.
I'll be very short on this one. I like how the female characters are written. Because in a world like that, they're chattel. But yet, there's so much intrigue going on, and so many of them, with the limited power they have, they're able to use their power. And it's actually kicked back against some of the males, and I like that. And the other is, you got to remember, comment was made, everyone is an enemy. So all of this is intrigue, which means it's going to be a lot of talking, more than a lot of fighting, because that's what intrigue really is. And that's... what you have to look at it as is that, my God, they talk a lot. And some of it will sound boring, but a lot of it is just, instead of sparring with the swords, they're sparring with words.
Right. There's a lot of that, but it's good, though.
I totally agree. I like them, the sparring with words, way more than swords. I totally agree with Marcia on that. I like conversations where I feel like I don't know who I'm going to agree with. I always think that's the most interesting type of theater, is when I'm like, you know, two people are talking, you're like, well, I don't know, you know, like, they both have good points. That to me is what, like, The West Wing or something. That's when I really feel engaged as a viewer.
Yeah, there isn't as much of that in this, I'll give you that, but there's certain levels of subtlety to the characters that I really like that are in the books that I feel are coming out in the show. But I mean, we're starting, so we're still like establishing these characters and who they are, because there's so many of them.
Well, let's also leave it with this, that it's a different type of story than West Wing, which I didn't like, and some others, because it is a different type. And you know what? Everyone's going to like something different. And I think we really need to move on.
Yep, we do.
Yeah.
All right, the next show we want to talk about is Stargate Universe, and we are coming up to the finale. This is the second...
Seems like the second to last,
yeah, isn't it? And it doesn't feel like a finale because they didn't know it was their finale, series finale, so that's actually depressing. But
which upsets me even more, because they started this amazing storyline with the planet of their descendants.
Right. All the stuff with the drones are kind of boring, but the descendants thing is really good, you know, and everything that they've done this season has been amazing. It actually makes me angry that first season was so bad, because that's why the ratings were so bad, is because they didn't start...
Well, technically, this is still the first season. This is just 1.5.
No, it's not. This is actually second season. They've had a full first season. Yes, they
have. Okay, yeah, I guess you're right.
They had a full 20 episodes for first season, and this is the second 20 for second season.
Yeah.
It just makes me angry that they didn't get off to the right foot in first season, and it made the show kind of mediocre, and then everybody dropped off. And then this season,
And then they bring in this incredible story that just sucks you in.
Right. It's irritating. But, okay, so the story itself... what they've basically been doing is, which was great, is the drones are smart and have cut them off from their energy supply, so they have to resupply in a blue giant, which apparently is a very bad idea because they're really, really hot. So, and Rush, man, as soon as Rush told the woman who got stuck in the body, he told Park that she'd be fine if she got in the water, I was like, yeah, okay, water boils.
Yeah,
like, I was like, it's like, no, that's not a. I could see if the water.
It was obvious, like when she got stuck, and like this was so Rush. It was like the quintessential Rush moment. Like, he gets on the line with Park and says, "Listen, Park, your distress is causing Eli to not do his job as well. And I was like, is he going to tell her to kill herself? Like, I was expecting that.
He was like, you're distracting us from what we're trying to do because we have to go try to save you. So we're going to not save you. So just chill out there and go lay in the pool of water. And I was like, I'm a scientist and you're a scientist. And I'm thinking, if the temperatures are going to get really, really hot and you're telling me to get in water, I'm like, water boils. That's a bad idea. I mean, it's a good idea at first until the water gets hot.
Until the water boils, then you need to get the hell out.
Right. I was like, and then it's not a good idea.
But she did get out because the roof blew off.
Right. The roof then blows off. And so she's about to get sucked out of the ship, and she manages not to do that. But the freaking light from the sun blinds her now. So I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. I hate Rush. But I understood it was more either we save her or everyone on the ship dies. So it was, there was a bigger picture.
Well, not everyone on the ship because it was only them on the ship, those three on the ship. But Destiny would have been destroyed, so they wouldn't have been able to get back.
Right. Well, that's the thing is, everybody would have been screwed. So I understood his point.
Yeah.
But still, it was, man, he's cold. He is so cold. Yeah. But that's not new. And then the stuff that was going down on the planet, Young was confusing me. It looked like he was going on some secret mission. I was like, what is he doing? But then it was like,
I never really understood what he was doing.
But it was just he was getting clothes for Rey. Mm-hmm. That was it. That was his secret mission. I was like, oh, well, that wasn't that interesting. But
yeah.
But it was still, all that was still good, and them destroying the probe and
all that stuff. I thought the scene where, like, they're just, like, throwing so many bullets at the one drone in the street was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then Young comes in, and he's just, like, casually just, like, unloading his gun on the drone. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, all that stuff was pretty good. So, thumbs up for this second to last episode. And again, I will reiterate that I will be depressed and all that when the show ends. Because I really don't feel like it's going to wrap nothing is going to get wrapped up. I can tell.
I don't think they can wrap anything up. Like, they could maybe wrap up this new storyline, but that's just going to make it even more depressing.
Well, and they didn't know that they were canceling when they did the episode. So, there you go. All right. Next thing we want to talk about is NCIS, and really quickly, this episode was a bizarre kind of flashback to Tony, when Tony and Gibbs first meet each other, which I have to say was one of the most, I don't want to say homoerotic, but I might have to say that.
It certainly felt that way.
Because there's like the moment where Tony like tackles Gibbs to the ground the first time they meet, and Gibbs gives him this look, and the only thing that was missing was Gibbs licking his lips. Like, I was like, what was that? I was like, what was that about?
Like, just for me in those flashbacks, Tony's hair was just way too distracting in the flashbacks with like that jet black, clearly dye job.
Yeah, that was weird. I was like, why is his hair black 10 years earlier? Like, I didn't know what they were. He said he wanted to be more Italian. I was like, I don't think that was the answer. So he looked looked really weird.
Looked like somebody who got like kicked out of the set of West Side Story.
Yeah, it was a little bizarre. But the flashback information, and I liked how Tony and Gibbs clicked immediately.
Yeah.
And I always wondered why he went, oh, what the heck happened to his fiance? He was like, oh, I proposed to her. And then he goes to NCIS, and, like, we never hear from her again. Like, what the heck?
I know.
That was so, like, bizarre.
And then, of course, it ends with Gibbs giving Tony the first head slap ever.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, you're not going to make that a habit, are you? I was like, this is great. that was pretty good. I thought it was a nice change from the normal episodes. It let us see behind the curtain a little bit, you know? Because we've heard a lot about Tony
and
being on the team.
It was cool just to see a little bit more of Tony's history.
Right.
And the history of his relationship with Gibbs, and which was cool for me, just like seeing how tense they've been this season because of Tony sleeping with that other agent.
Yeah, going against the rules.
Yep.
I thought it was a nice change. So thumbs up Can't wait for the next week's episode. Though I am afraid for their big... They've been talking about a big change that's coming. I am afraid of that. Because one thing NCIS doesn't... It does it well, but it still scares me when they say they're going to change stuff. Anyway, next thing I want to talk about really quick is Glee. This week's episode was...
the Fleetwood Mac Rumors episode.
Right. Oh, it was a silly rumors... where everybody was telling ridiculous rumors and about one stuff is out of the toothpaste, you can't put it back in, that whole deal.
Yeah.
I don't like that. How they write Sue anymore. Now I'm bored by her.
You know, I'm bored with Sue too, but like, the reason I didn't totally hate this episode was because for the most part, their versions of the Fleetwood Mac songs were not overblown, overproduced, ridiculous teeny bopper nonsense. Except for that last Don't Stop number, which just killed me.
I want you to know, I fast-forwarded through most of it. I stayed for the songs, except the last one. I heard about 20 seconds of that and said, delete.
This is so weird. I always think it's so weird when I hear people that are big TV people, and Libya has done this too. I don't care if I think that if it's a terrible episode, I would never fast-forward. It's such a strange, like... I don't know. It's so weird. It's just very. I'm telling Marcy. I'm not saying that's wrong of you. It's just such a different way of thinking. I never. I might hate the episode and be like, God, that was god awful. But I never do that. I don't know why. I don't know. Do you do that, Josh?
Peter, I don't do that either. I never fast forward. I think for me, it's because I want to have an informed opinion.
Yeah, I guess so.
I feel like if I miss something, then I'm not entitled to an informed opinion.
I would agree. It's kind of like if I see a trailer for a movie that looks terrible, I can't really say it's terrible because I didn't really see it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. But I try to. The show that I fast forward the most is The Event. And have you noticed I don't talk about that show anymore?
Yes, we haven't talked about that in a while.
Right. So The Event is the biggest culprit for that. Glee is too, but I don't fast forward the story. I always watch the story. If I fast forward, it's because their musical rendition of whatever song I'm not interested in. Like, I might fast forward the song, but I don't fast forward whenever anybody's actually talking and there's actually story going on. I watch the story, I watch all that, and then they start singing some song, and I'm like,
The story for this week was pretty much just them throwing rumors around, and the only thing that comes out of this at all is the reveal that Sam's family is a victim of the economic downturn and living in a motel.
Actually, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I did like that.
I was good.
I really liked Lord Tubbington.
Like they go through that whole thing, but then it ends with them giving him this peppy Don't Stop number, and I'm like, okay, we're going to save this person's problems with songs.
Well, I mean, it's silly, but that's kind of Glee.
I know, but like that sort of thing just annoys me with Glee, because like they take on these very real, very tough issues and completely make them glib by trying to solve them through song.
I have a question. Who really is their audience for this show?
Teenagers.
I guess teenagers like that kind of stuff. Okay. Yeah.
Teenagers know Fleetwood Mac, really?
Well, I mean, that is generally their audience, if you look at it, but...
That's what I'm wondering. Do they even know who their audience is?
I don't think they do. I think, like, this started off as a cool idea and just sort of became, like, Ryan Murphy's pet project for just doing whatever the hell he wants because Fox has pretty much written him a blank check.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think when Glee started... My reaction was that it reminded me of Alexander Payne's Election, and Election is about a high school kid, but it's not for. It's one of those things where there are movies about teenagers that are for teenagers, like 16 Candles, but then there are movies like Election that's not really made for teenagers to watch. That's made for adults to watch about teenagers. So that's what I liked about Glee in the beginning. Was I was like, oh, I kind of like this. Kind of, you know, everything's over-exaggerated and everything. But I would agree that the show is so schizophrenic and it's so inconsistent in its quality and stuff. You know?
And, you know, like, I'm willing to bet next week not one mention of Sam living in a motel anymore.
Also, I can't believe that, like, I'm sorry, what's the character in the wheelchair? What's his name?
Artie.
Artie has that moment where he calls Brittany stupid And, yeah, you know, you feel bad for her, and it's, like, kind of awkward. And then it's, like, completely dropped. And I was like, well...
Well, no, it's not dropped, because they broke up. That was the thing.
They broke up?
Yeah, that broke them up. And
it felt really cheap.
Well, I thought that they...
I thought that was actually handled pretty well. And I actually, like, I liked Brittany's reaction, because...
Oh, no, I liked her reaction.
And I thought, like, yeah, breaking up with him, because, like, this, he was the only person in the school who hasn't called her stupid, and once he did, it's like, okay, you're just one of them, it's over.
Right. And I, only thing I felt about that is they broke her up so that she could be with Santana, and then get her heart broken by Santana, so, yeah.
Which I didn't like, because, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I don't really want to, like, ship any of the characters, but I kind of ship Santana and Brittany.
I do, too, so that broke my heart a little bit.
I was the opposite.
And it was all Santana's fault. I'm like, Santana, you could... Like, Brittany wants to be with you. You want to be with her. What is the problem?
See, I feel like I thought the idea of making Santana liking Brittany was, like, kind of interesting. But her character is so much of a villain through most of the show. I mean, she's kind of like Sue. She's basically just kind of evil. That I had a hard time sympathizing. Like, I appreciate they were trying, but yeah, I never really sided with her.
Santana than I ever did with Sue, because Sue is just so an over the top villain, especially now, that it's very hard to, like, sympathize her with whenever they, like, show her, like, her soft side.
Right. In the first season when Sue would go see her sister, I was okay with that. That's
the point. I know, but they don't...
In the first season, yeah, but now it's just like...
Yeah, they don't...
Sue's become kind of a caricature of herself.
Oh, no, she totally has. I just wanted to say before we move on, I did like Brittany's Lord Tubbington cat. That cat was awesome.
Yeah.
Because that's a fat cat, man. Like, I was like, who on set owns that cat? I mean, like, where'd they get that cat? I'm like...
Yeah, I love the cat.
All right, yeah. Moving on. We're going to talk about Justified, and this is where Peter takes a bow for a moment.
Just finished season one. Fantastic. And I'm out.
Okay. Now leave the room.
All right, so we're at the season finale of season two of Justified. And go.
And all I can say is, oh, my God. Like, I was actually tweeting. I was live tweeting while I was watching it and just kept using hashtag holy crap tonight is gonna rock my face. Because it really was like the big shootouts and ending with every Bennett dying except Dickie.
Oh, come on. He was the one I wanted to die the most.
I know, me too. And this whole season we've been like, Dickie is not long for this world. Dickie is not long for this world. And he outlived all of the others.
I figured Dickie was going to be like a cockroach. Because, you know, he was going to be the one to make it no matter what. I'm hoping Winona falls on her face next year. Because I think she was trying to screw his life up. I feel so bad for his dad. I feel so bad for so many of them. And
I feel so bad for what happened between Raylan and Art. And I love their relationship, but it was ruined by stupid Winona.
I don't think it's been ruined. It got some dings, but he did send the marshals to rescue him.
Well, I was actually...
This was sort of
my speculation. Like, did he, like, cut a deal with Winona? Like, I will save Raylan as long as you leave town? Because I would love that. I would love him forever if he did that.
That would be awesome.
The problem is that none of these people, when you make a deal with them to leave town, actually leave town.
That's true.
I know, right?
But I think that Winona, I thought, was completely unreasonable. When he's like, I have to go save this 14-year-old girl... And she's like, no, it's not your business. I was like, how? What? And it wasn't even like it was a stranger. It was a girl that he had been taking care of for months. And now
this girl was his responsibility.
Exactly.
I have not liked Winona seriously since the beginning, because I saw her as a manipulative bitch, and not in the good bitch way. I saw her as being, like, selfish, and she wants what she wants when
I thought of her as, like, okay, but sort of a non-entity last season, and this season she has just been, like, stuck in my craw the whole time.
You know, Raylan does what she says for the most part because, well, he's following his penis. He loves her. He loves her even though she on him more than once, and he loves her. Problem is... Yep. She doesn't care about him, in my opinion. She just wants him. And so she'll do whatever it takes. And she thought, threatening with the baby, that he would then give up on this. Because I don't even think she's really pregnant.
I don't think she is either.
I think she just did it because she wants him to leave the Marshal Service.
Okay, or now, we're not in high school. I don't think
she... Have you not seen Winona? Have you not listened to her?
No, Winona's in high school. Come on.
Well, yes, I think she's manipulative, but I don't think she's that... Because that's an unforgivable.
Absolutely it is.
So even if she gets him, then she loses him.
This is a woman who thought stealing $50,000 from an evidence locker was an okay idea.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I don't trust her now. What I think's happening is we're seeing the real Winona. It's not that she's becoming this. This is what she's always been. She realized that she didn't want to be with her second husband because he wasn't going to be able to take care of her like she wanted. So she went back to Raylan. And and when Raylan isn't able to take care of her how she wants, then she's going to dump him.
I think you're making her to be a bigger villain than I think she is. I mean, granted, I don't like her for him, but I don't think she's as bad as you're painting her to be.
Well, we will see in 6 months.
I agree with Marcia that I think the pregnancy is fake. And when that comes out, I hope to God Raylan just kicks her to the curb.
I don't think it's fake. Or if it's... Or they might have her have a miscarriage or something, but I don't think it's fake. Anyway.
Well, but still. I loved how Megs took her own life.
I thought that was great, and I knew that was going to happen as soon as she asked Raylan if he wanted a drink. I was like, first of all, I thought, oh God, she's going to poison him. And then I thought, why would she? Oh, she's going to poison herself.
Right. I realized she was going to poison herself too. And I liked how they didn't let us see that glass she got from underneath. I was like, oh, that was one of the poison glasses. Yeah. But they didn't let us see where she put them. So I was kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that was cool. And then but she has that moment of hesitation before she drinks. And I was like, oh, that's because she's got the poison one.
Right. That was all pretty good.
Yeah.
But Mags is far and away my favorite character this season, followed very closely by Loretta, because that girl is amazing.
Oh yeah, I liked her reaction and how she was kind of like, yeah, I need to get something. And she's very polite, even when she's mad. She's like, yes, mister, I need to get to such and such, and if you be so kind, keep your hands to yourself or whatever. I have she has a gun and she's threatening this guy, yet she's being very polite about it.
But I also,
she just reminded me of a modern version of Maddie Ross from True Grit.
Yeah. Also, Boyd, he started out being absolute despicable, became a very honorable person, got screwed for being an honorable person, tried to stay an honorable person, and now he's an honorable criminal. And I'm forgetting his ex-sister-in-law's
name. Which is what Boyd was always destined to be.
Absolutely. It was kind of a shocker to see him and, I can't remember her name,
Ava.
In bed together with the swastika still on his arm. That was a shock. It was oh, I forgot. He really was a horrible person.
It was he was technically only in the neo-Nazi group for the first episode.
Right.
And it was only so as an excuse.
Right.
So that he could blow things up. He admitted that. But look at her. She said to him, you can't even live in my house if you go back to a life of crime. And now she's coming out with a shotgun.
Right.
Yeah.
And getting shot.
Yep.
Yeah. Which threw me. I was like, no!
Well, I really like that moment where Raylan is hanging from the tree and Dickie's beating him with the bat. And Boyd comes and saves him. And so they have, I need my gun. I'm going to go. All right. You got him? Yeah, I'll take care of the body later. All right. And they were basically negotiating killing Dickie. It was great.
And Dickie's there okay. wait a minute. I can be useful to you.
Yeah.
Raylan's okay, you're right. And I love every scene that Raylan and Boyd are in together, because Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins, they just really try to out badass each other in every scene they're in, and it's awesome.
He was like, are you giving me an order or are you asking me? He's like, well, when you tell the story, you can tell people I was asking you.
That was so great.
But the way you learn more and more of their history as the time goes on, how they were best friends, how they even worked in the mines together, and how they've separated since, and yet there's still that affection there. Even when they hated each other, you know, Boyd right. still had affection for him. Otherwise, he'd have been dead a lot sooner.
Right.
And it's just, it's a respect. And I love watching the good and evil and the shades thereof. Because now Raylan's got shades of evil.
Yeah, well, that's what makes Boyd and Raylan so cool, because they really are two sides of the same coin. Like, they are practically the same person. It's just one's a little bit lighter and one's a little bit darker.
And the question is, which one's which? Because it's not what you think.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I'm going with, like, just generic terms, because Raylan is a U.S. Marshal and Boyd is now a criminal mastermind.
I like put the mastermind at the end of that. Nice.
Oh, he's totally a mastermind. That guy's a genius.
It's a very good game of chess when he planned out how what Megs was going to do to him.
Right.
How he knew exactly and how he planned ahead of time. And
everybody underestimates him. I don't understand that. Like, why do people always underestimate
him? Even his dad.
The only person who doesn't underestimate him is Raylan.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody else does. They're like, oh, we're going to double cross him. He'll never see it coming. I was like, yeah, he will.
Well, because I think they're used to dealing with, like, people from Harlan. And people from Harlan typically are not as smart as either Boyd or Raylan.
Right. Yeah. So, all right, let's move on. It was a great finale. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Cannot wait for next season.
I know. I'm so psyched for next season. It can only get better.
Next up, we want to talk about Modern Family. And this week's episode was Mother's Day. So, yes. What do you think?
I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, I love the show. So, I mean, but I was a fan of seeing who's Claire's little boy?
Luke.
A fan. It was interesting because Luke is such a mama's boy, and the two girls are like, you know, we're not going to apologize to her. Like, it's her fault that the Mother's Day is terrible. And of course, he, you know, he likes his mom and everything. And that whole tension I thought was really funny.
Oh, I liked
that. I loved when, like, Luke was trying, he was, like, trying to go to apologize to her, and the two sisters were like, no, we're your mother now.
Also, when they were up on the top of the mountain, and they're complaining about their kids, and, what is her name? Oh,
Gloria
just starts going off on Manny.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he's
You know Manny's going to be there. I
didn't realize he was going to be there, actually. So the reveal that he was there was pretty good. And she's like, who is that hurting? He's like, nobody but me. And he storms off. And then she totally lies.
Yeah,
I know.
Oh, that was great.
There was one line, and it was, like, really not apropos of anything, but it just killed me. And it was the younger daughter, when they're on the mountain, she's like, I just chewed a bug that flew into my mouth just so I could feel something.
She was like, I'm so bored.
Bored me.
That was all really good. Oh, and then
I love the Cam and Mitch, because, like, they finally, like, address the issue that we were all thinking of anyway, which is that Cam is the wife.
Right.
Right.
Cam, but Cam is the wife.
Yeah.
He might claim that he's not, but he totally is.
Oh, he totally is. And, like, just the way they handled it and how he's, like, trying to... He's trying to prove manliness.
And he tears up the Mother's Day card, and he's so angry about it. It's all great. What about Jay crying about his mother?
Actually, that worked. Really, I sweet. Thought it was really cheesy, like, but it worked.
You guys talk at the same time. Do it again.
Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, I thought that would have been cheesy, but actually, I thought it worked. I thought it was good.
Oh, me too. Like, I thought it was very sweet and very genuine, and then, like, they get the big group hug going on when he starts suddenly crying in front of the whole family.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Oh, and what is his name? The dad. Not Jay.
Phil?
Phil. Phil had that awkward moment where he saw him crying and he didn't know what to do. And then he was like, oh, I think he needs a hug. I was like, do you not know Jay? Like, what are you doing?
And I can't remember what Jay said to him to shut him down when he tried, but it was hilarious.
Yeah, and then he was like, I have goggles for the onions so that I don't cry. And he was like, what kind of man are you? It was all that was all really good. So yeah, I thought actually this time I thought all three storylines were good. I enjoyed them all.
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah,
I would agree.
All right, you guys said you want to talk about Community, so go forth.
This is a Fistful of Paintball, part one, and it's a follow up to their episode from last season, which is actually a show that got me hooked on Community, Modern Warfare, where they have their big game of Paintball Assassin, where basically the entire campus becomes this post-apocalyptic war zone where people are just killing each other left and right with paintballs. And
yeah, and I was trying to think, in last season, what was the prize?
I can't remember what the prize was, but it was clearly something that people were willing to destroy the campus over.
Right.
And so this year the dean was like, okay, we're going to get this ice cream shop to sponsor us, and it'll be a stupid little rinky-dink prize that people won't destroy each other over. And then they announce, it's $100,000 cash, and everybody goes nuts.
Right, and then that leads to meeting a student they'd never seen before, which is played by Sawyer from Lost.
Josh Holloway, yeah, he is the only person who could have pulled off that role.
Yeah, he was perfect, perfect. It was just great how Joel McHale, Jeffrey, of course, is very jealous because he's not that good looking, you know, like, that was really good.
I love, like, when they're, like, trying to get more ammo to combat him, and they finally find, like, the mother load of ammo, and all Jeff can say is, okay, let's see who's more attractive now.
Right.
And Troy's like, you've got a problem.
That was really good. I loved all the stuff with Annie, just like Annie being kind of the bad. In fact, I think, doesn't Abed even go, I kind of like her this time, or something like that. Yeah, like, yeah. She's more kick-ass.
She was very kick-ass, and, like, Alison Brie definitely knocked it out of the park with this. I mean, I've loved her from day one.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
So, but seeing her as, like, this kick-ass gunslinger was so great. And the fact that they did this whole thing as, like, a Sergio Leone spaghetti western was just totally inspired.
Yes, and I love that, you know, I'm assuming this is their two-part finale, right?
I think there's one more episode after the second part of this, but yeah.
Because I liked how it's all been coming down to, you know, that great Dungeons and Dragons episode, right. The episode where Pierce was in the hospital, where it's basically all about how this season Pierce has really
becoming like a real villain.
Right. And it's all really kind of addressed here. And then we see that they were playing cards, and they weren't playing cards. They were basically deciding to vote him out of the group, but it had to be unanimous, you know,
and
like, it was really good. Yeah.
Voted to keep him in.
Yes. Right, right, right. I thought it was great.
It was so great, and the preview for next week looks unbelievably epic.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, Community
more epic than paintball deserves at all, but I can't wait.
It's so interesting how Community has become this show. It's almost like a live-action version of when The Simpsons or South Park, when they were in their early years, they really took advantage of the fact that because they were cartoons, they could do anything. You know, if they want to kill a character off, they want to... And I kind of feel like Community's almost doing that live... Like, they had that episode a few weeks ago where they were basically doing a mock clip episode, but they would be doing clips that we've never seen before. Remember we were in that Old West? And you're like, wait, where were they in the Old West? Like, I really think that the show is just so clever.
The show is it's probably one of the most original shows that's on TV right now.
Yeah.
And, like, you can tell the people who write this are very smart people because just, like, the amount of references they do and just, like, the way the characters interact, it's so well-crafted. Like, this show is quickly becoming one of my favorite shows on TV.
Yeah, me too. And I would agree. I think I liked the first season, but I really feel like the second season has taken it to another level.
It really has.
All right. And wrapping up, you have final comments?
Oh, so yeah, I can't wait for next week. Looking forward to it.
Oh, I am so psyched for next week. I can't wait to see what happens.
All right. The next show we want to talk about is Vampire Diaries, this is our penultimate. We only have one more episode to the finale. Apparently next week is going to rock. It's like finales all around. So we get to the big ceremony or the big ritual that we've been waiting for all season. And right. pretty much the whole episode was the ritual, I would say. And I have a
just
point.
About.
Just but, about, yeah, yeah. I would say. I remember when I was speaking through a commercial, I noticed my timer was like 30 minutes. And at that point, basically everyone was still, you know, hostage. And I was like, oh, is this whole episode going to be like the ritual? I'm like, I think it is.
Well, my only problem with it was, say the ritual's going on all, granted it was going on all night, but I felt that Bonnie and those guys were staying in the hideout like way too long. I was like, shouldn't you like...
It really were.
Yeah, I was like, shouldn't you guys be getting to the ritual location, you know, sometime soon? They're still doing research.
I didn't think of that, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
I mean, as soon as Damon showed up saying, oh my God, Klaus didn't pick me for the ritual, they should have been like, okay, we should get there and try to save whoever he did pick.
Right.
And especially like when he says, oh, by the way, he turned Jenna and she's the vampire he's going to sacrifice.
Right.
Why they weren't out the door as soon as he said that is beyond me.
Yeah, they all hung out for a while talking about it. I was like, what are you guys doing? So that, I thought, was strange. But I have to give Jenna points because as soon as she saw like the other woman get her heart ripped out and realized that her heart was next, her reaction, like, she figured, okay, I probably can't beat this guy in a fight. So her solution was good. Like, she's like, I know what I have to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was a good plan, except she should have snapped the neck like Damon did later. Like, I was like,
I agree. But the fact that she at least came up with that, I was like, oh, good plan. You know?
I mean, she paid for it, but there was a good plan.
I thought that was brilliant.
Can I just say how sad I am that Jenna is dead now?
I never
loved Jenna, but just like Shannon on Lost, they gave her a good sign-off, I'd say.
And you actually started to care about her, and because her fear of dying was like the whole episode.
Right.
And you kept waiting for them to figure something out to save her, and then they don't, and you're like, oh. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then the funeral made me all misty. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And I have to...
It's a good penultimate episode. I mean, now, of course, we have to figure out what's going to happen with Damon with his wolf bite.
Right. Well, one thing I wanted to address real quick was John, the only thing that he did as a father that was any good was dying for Elena. That was it. Like, he sucks as a father. And
yeah, but the fact that he did that was kind of like it almost negated everything.
Yeah, I was like, okay, you get points. You get a couple points, dad points for that, because you were willing to die for your daughter. All right.
I would agree, yeah.
But, then we have
Elijah and Klaus basically joining forces again.
That broke my heart.
You know, that was a pretty good scene. I really like Elijah. Maybe it's because I like Elijah, but I'm hoping it's not that Elijah is just a villain. I think it's more that he really wants to know about the rest of his family.
Right.
And I think he doesn't even for a second go, I'm sorry, you know, when he's like leaving.
Yeah, he does. It doesn't excuse the fact that they sacrificed.
No, don't want to kill him.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, they sacrificed everything on his plan.
Right.
And then
he
double crossed them. And I kind of thought that he was going to when Stefan was like, because Elijah's like, oh, you're a man of honor. And he's like, I assume you are. Like, as soon as he said that, I was like, of course Elijah's a man of honor. Why would you say that? And then I was like, oh, something's going to go wrong. Like,
well,
I didn't
know.
Well,
but I think at that point, Elijah.
Man of honor, but based on what?
Right. But I think at that point, when Elijah says, you can count on me, I think he means it.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that he didn't mean it. I'm just saying
his plan was to kill Klaus, but then Klaus threw a wrench in that.
Right.
By telling him exactly the thing that would make him stop.
Right. And because, you know, your brothers, you know what your brother's weak point is.
Right.
And so he went right forward because Klaus, because Elijah literally had his hand around Klaus's heart. Klaus is like,
Stefan brought up a great point with Elijah, which was like, okay, can you do this? Because I know that if it were Damon, I wouldn't be able to do this.
Right. Right. But then he gave a good reason for why he'd be able to do it.
A great reason.
But, well, yeah, which was that he splintered the family, or killed everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Or he thought, anyways.
Right. So that was all very good. But I still don't think, like you said, I don't think they're allies. I think that Elijah's going to keep him a prisoner until he gets what he wants.
But how can he keep him a prisoner? Because now he's uber hybrid vamp.
Well, that's only for the full moon.
It right now is.
Yeah, I know, but he literally still has his hand wrapped around his heart. He's not stupid.
Okay, that's true.
So
that's gonna be awkward, like trying to find his family while your hand is in your brother's chest. It's like, I'm not letting go because as soon as I do, you're gonna wolf out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm assuming he's gonna do that till he can put him in some kind of restraints. Like chains do work against werewolves and against vampires. So I'm figuring you keep your hand around his heart till you put some chains on him, because it would be stupid for him to just let him go and say, I trust you to bring me to my family. No.
If he does that, I'll lose all respect for him.
Right. I don't think he's that dumb. And the set of circumstances that were required to get Klaus weak enough for Elijah to strike were like one in a million. Right. So he's got to keep that advantage as long as possible. But yeah, it broke my heart that Elijah betrayed them, because I was like, maybe Elijah will be on the team, you know? No.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I liked him being on the team.
Yeah, which would be really cool. And I can't let this discussion go without just saying, how awesome was Bonnie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, she locked everybody up. She put Jeremy to sleep, and then she locked...
the teacher guy.
Alaric locked him out so that he couldn't fight. She was like, anybody without superpowers does not get to go to this party. So
And then she shows up and just like pummels the hell out of Klaus.
That's awesome.
I was like, yes, go Bonnie.
Yeah, he was like, but you're dead. No, that was
like,
great.
I'm not dead enough.
That was all really good. So, thumbs up. Cannot wait for the finale. The finale is going to be all about how the heck they're going to save Damon, because he looks like he's going the way of deadness. But you know that he's not going to die. But I have because they had an entire episode showing that you cannot heal a wolf bite. Now it's kind of like, well, what the heck are they going to do now? So that was a brilliant setup.
Can I say what my theory was?
Go ahead.
My theory, but you have a good counter, was that I feel like you can't save Damon with the wolf bite, but then I was thinking the whole thing about Klaus is he's this weird thing where he's
going to have to figure into like this cure.
Yeah, he's a combination, but so I feel like, well, maybe if Damon gets his blood or something, that'll somehow do it. Although, Olivia, your point is you feel like Klaus is gone for the rest of the season.
Right, because I don't see that Elijah's going to hang around in Mystic Falls with his brother.
Right, right. So like that's feel like that's part of the solution, but you're right. It feels like Klaus is like on the other side of the planet now.
Right, because they're going to go find the family. So, yeah, they're gone.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure. I would be disappointed if it's just, because I think you had said you think it's because Taylor's the one who did it, right?
Tyler. Yeah.
But I feel like a werewolf might have tried that before. Like, a vampire might have tried that before. Like, a werewolf bites you, you capture the werewolf, and you try to take their blood. I feel like that might have already been tried in history.
But we don't know that.
We don't know for sure. But that feels a little too easy, because he's, as you said, Tyler doesn't like Damon since he killed his uncle or whatever.
Right.
So
that's not going to be easy.
True.
All right, so finale next week. Cannot wait.
Yep.
Yeah.
Next up, we want to talk about Supernatural. And
Castiel!
No! He's gone to the dark side. He's pretty dark side. There's no his rationalization for the stuff that he's done is exactly that rationalization.
Well, like he said, angels
and
don't
Crowley
know.
Actually made like some really good arguments too.
Well, yeah, because he's the devil. That's his job.
Right.
Well,
but like I kind of like the whole idea of like Castiel is the new god and Crowley is the new devil.
Yes, but that's bad. If Castiel's the new god, we're in trouble. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know, right?
Go ahead. Well,
part of the issue with Castiel is, as he said, angels are used to being told what to do. They don't understand free will. And even when he tried to give them free will, they still said, okay, is that what God wants? Well, then what do you want? The problem is he doesn't know what free will is. He's learned everything from Sam, Dean, and Bobby. And he still doesn't know a lot. And he thinks he's doing the best for the world. Yeah, and and he thinks he's doing the best for Dean, which is really kind of funny as all hell. I'm sorry.
He's like, I'm doing this for you. Everything I've done is for you. And I was just like, oh my God, if you guys get any more, that's not even bromance. I don't know what that is.
It's become stalking at this point. Like that whole bit where like, Castiel was like watching Dean while he was in his normal life, and he's like standing there watching him invisible.
Yes.
What? Like, that's a little creepy.
A little?
Yeah, well, go ahead. You know, what was it, the last week or the week before, you know, Castiel shows up and he goes, dude, get out of my ass. there's just so much going on, and I'm rewatching the old ones on the daytime, so it's even funnier for me. But he thinks he's doing the right thing. And even though Crowley is a son of a, in his way, he is too. Because as like Spike said on Buffy, why destroy the world when I don't have a place to play then? I like it. And that's what Crowley looks at. He likes Earth. He likes what it is. And he likes the give and take. He doesn't want to destroy the world. He sees that Cass is the only way that the world does not get destroyed.
Right.
And now the next thing that I look at is it God who brought him back? Who did bring him back?
I thought that was interesting because he's assuming that God brought him back. But the way Crowley is behaving, I think Crowley might have done it.
I think Crowley
did too. And can I just say as an aside, I love Crowley's redesign of hell.
just a long line
for all eternity.
I thought Beetlejuice. I was waiting. I thought it was going to be.
I know, me too.
Where are the government employees? That's the only thing they're missing. It was wonderful. And what happens when they hit the front?
They go right to the back of the line.
Oh no! But and think about it. That's Crowley. He's not looking to torture people for fun. He's not looking to do all this horrible evil. He just wants to screw with them.
Yeah.
And he wants power, too.
He wants power, but what's he going to do with the power? When he gets the power, he's still not going to destroy the world. He's still not going to take it over, because then it's not fun.
No, when he wants the power as an insurance policy against anybody else who would try to throw him down.
Right.
Right. So now you've got Raphael, who wants to start the war all over again.
Right.
And you've got Cass, who's trying as best as he's able to. And he's doing the wrong things, but for the right reason.
Right, and the only thing is I felt that they didn't... I mean, granted, he was lying for half the time he was talking to them. But then once he actually starts telling the truth, and he's trying to explain to them what's going on, they won't listen. He never finishes his explanation at all.
No, he never does. And Dean just won't let him. And like... My favorite moment in the whole thing was like Dean just sort of lays it out for him in simple terms, and Cass is like, oh man, where were you when I needed to hear that? And Dean's like, I was here. Where were you?
And actually, he was there. When he left the heaven, the memory of the autistic kid or the autistic man, he went to where Dean
was. He went to Dean.
Now, I don't think... That was Dean physically there. Wasn't that Dean's dream also?
No. It was physically.
No.
It was actually
Dean in his perfect life, and Cass was just cloaking himself.
Right. It was Dean living his life with the woman and the kid, and it was his whole that year where he had the perfect life.
So
the whole thing was Castiel didn't want to interrupt that. He didn't want to take away Dean's happiness.
So then, what they're telling us is that. This all started even longer ago than we thought it started.
It started as soon as right at the end of last season.
Right. It's when Cass brought Sam back. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of it.
Right.
You did not see the whole episode?
No. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
Even more, it started when Cass was brought back.
Right. The moment that Cass was brought back, he thought he had a destiny at that point.
So then becomes the question... If it's not God who brought Cass back when he was exploded this last time, if it wasn't, because he's technically he's been killed twice. Let's say it's not God, then, and if it was Crowley, because he is so powerful, does that mean that Crowley also saved Sam and Dean and put him on the plane?
No, Crowley didn't have the power then because Lucifer was in charge at that point.
Then the question is still... Who did that?
Well, we don't know.
Well, I still think it is God, because God is a very hand... For the most part, like, he will help you, but he'll never explain why. So, having Cass have this whole episode where he's basically laying out his story to God and appealing to him to, like, give him a sign that he's on the right path, that's not how God works.
Yeah.
Because he's, I think God is also trying to teach Castiel how to have free will. Like, right. He's trying to create a new type of angel with Castiel.
You know, in a lot of the scenes where they're tying down demons and they're holding them in place, there are huge Jewish stars. And it's interesting to me because that's not Jewish angels. Jewish God tells you to your face and argues. In the Jewish religion, we actually argue with God and a few times won the discussion. It's not this, I give you a sign. It's, excuse me, everybody, here, I wrote it down for you. I sent you a person with it.
Yeah,
it's
but none of this is also, this is an angel interacting with God, and it's a very different kind of dynamic because right. humans, we've had free will forever. Angels never have.
Right. And technically, they still don't. The only angels that had free will got killed off by the other angels. Anna, who I really hope really didn't get totally... I'm hoping she's somewhere. That, yeah. like Cass, she was able to escape and she's somewhere. That,
right.
That would be really, really cool.
That's what I'm hoping for, too.
All right, let's wrap this one up.
I'm looking forward. I understand next week is supposed to be 2 hours.
Yeah, it's the... Is it next week? I thought it was May 20th or something.
Well, whenever the next one is, it's going to be the finale. It's going to be double long, and what I think is very evil. Again, I can see when Bed Endlin took over and how the stories changed and everything. So
it was Kripke, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Kripke wrote this, and the way the things are going.
Bed Endlin wrote and directed this episode, yes. And you could tell.
Right. What I find amusing is when they wrote the finale and they filmed the finale, they had no idea if they were going to be renewed or not. And I think that's so nice and evil to potentially left the fans on a major cliffhanger. Yeah, that's evil. I like that.
Okay, so next thing we want to talk about is the Fringe finale. And this one was bizarre in that we skipped forward 15 years. And at first, they did this weird thing where at first Peter was aware that he was 15 years in the future. And then he was all of a sudden... in that right time. So it was like they transferred his consciousness or something.
Well, yeah. I heard, I looked on the web that people said that if you look at last week's episode, you see that he does have a wedding ring on. And so it was a pretty good fake out because for an audience member, I was like, oh, he's time traveled 15 years in the future. And I guess, yeah, that's not what it is. It's just, this is just the Peter of 15 years. Right. I mean, 15 years, which I thought was pretty cool.
They also did his consciousness. So his consciousness, not his body, but his consciousness actually is watching this. That's
right.
That's the key.
Right. But I thought that was, I thought that was pretty cool. I think I said last week, I was nervous that it was going to be a third alternate universe because I was like, oh, are they just going to do it's another? But it's like, it's not really because it's the future. Although I did notice, they had a new credit sequence?
Didn't notice that.
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, though, I thought it was pretty good. You know, I mean, I always think Fringe is a little silly because it is dealing with characters saying things like, you know, these two universes will explode. And, you know, but if you go with that, I thought it was pretty good. I liked seeing how our Walter looked like the Walter from the pilot. Because he's got, you know, he's in prison, he's got the crazy hair, and like...
Oh, did you notice that he had a stroke?
Yeah, I was thinking that too, because of his lips. Yeah.
Not just his lips, they did something to his eye, and he never moved his right arm.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I think you're right. I think something happened to him.
Like they never referenced it like you just saw it, which I thought was very clever on their part.
Yeah, you just had to figure it out. And if you missed it,
what happened to Broyles' eyes?
Ooh, I don't know.
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah,
but you see, this is the thing that like always like kind of bugs me. Whenever you do an episode of a show where you jump forward in time a little bit, almost every time there is one character who has lost an eye. Like it just seems like standard, like. This just shows that we've been through some stuff.
Well, they've been through some stuff, so, you know, that was pretty clear. I like that Olivia mastered her powers.
That was cool.
But I have to say that the moment where they kill Olivia, I didn't feel anything. because
I was pretty surprised. I was like, what? Well, I didn't believe it until they cut to the funeral.
Yeah. I was kind of shocked by it, but then like part of me realized, okay, this is the future. This is just a possible future. So we're okay.
And that's pretty much what I thought. Like, as soon as they killed Olivia, I was like, oh, this isn't the real future. And it's right. Like, that was the instant where I knew. And so I felt nothing. However, I have to say the funeral was really pretty. It was a really pretty funeral. But everything kind of came together. Oh, and Walter, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
He was super, super evil.
Yeah.
He was like, okay, our world has been destroyed. And instead of being sad...
So now I'm going to destroy yours.
Yeah, instead of just being sad and grieving that his world is destroyed, he's like, and now I will kill billions of people on your world as well. I was like, what?
Well, that's what Walter Knitt would do. He is that type of person.
Oh, man, that's just vindictive. That's because he started it. Well, he didn't start it.
Yeah.
Walter started it by accident.
Right.
Walter Knitt was like, I will finish it. And then that didn't work, and he lost, so he's like, and now I will kill you again. Like,
yeah.
Really?
And I gotta say, though, to me, the best part of the whole episode was when the two worlds, when there was no more alternate, when it was basically all the characters were in one room.
Oh, that was pretty cool. Yeah. That was pretty cool, because I was like, wait a minute, did they just transfer Olivia? No, wait, no, everyone's in there. Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked that.
That was really cool.
But then Peter's like in the middle of a sentence and he just like disappears. And I went, what was that?
Yeah.
And then Olivia just finishes the sentence, but then we see from the observers that he didn't, so it's like now he never existed.
Erased from time. He never existed.
Well, I don't understand. How is that possible that he's erased from, cause that was the episode ended. And I was like, what the, huh?
Well, I think the idea being that like, they keep talking about this bridge between the worlds and all those wormholes. And I feel like, I guess he's kind of like now is the literal bridge. So it's like now maybe he can't exist in either world now. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. I was very confused. Yeah. That confused me. Like everything else I was following the timeline. I was following everything. And then he disappeared and they're like, and they didn't even know he existed. I was like, what do you mean? What? So that kind of threw me off, but I'm waiting for the explanation, obviously. Well, wait, that was the finale, so we got to wait till
we got to wait till next season to get an explanation.
Oh, yeah, I mean, man. That's not till the fall, but yeah. It was pretty good.
You think that was by accident, maybe? Yeah.
That was a pretty good head scratcher for the season, you know,
right.
To go, wow, what the heck? But yeah,
That just reminded me of like a Lost season finale where like everything seems wrapped up and then they throw something at you at the last minute that just makes you go, what?
Yeah, actually it did. It did kind of like, I don't know if I would say it was as good, but it did kind of remind me of the third season finale of Lost when everything kind of got flipped. And then at the very end, you know, you're at this moment where you're like, what? You know, like, yeah. So, but yeah, yeah. I thought it was really good. Like I think this has been the best season.
I thought it was a very solid season ender.
Yeah, definitely. Libby, would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this season has been better than any other season that they've had, mainly because every episode has been arc. They haven't wasted time.
Yeah, not really. Yeah, they pretty much. Even episodes like the one with the old couple in the apartment, when remember they think they're seeing ghosts, even that was still actually part of the bigger story.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I like. Like even their Monster of the Week episodes had some tie to the bigger story.
Right.
Which was really cool.
Alright, so...
Oh, wait, I also wanted to say, I really liked when Peter said, you know, you're my father, or you're my dad.
Yeah.
I kind of like, because that was one of the things that I knew we had to get through, that like, in the beginning of the season, there's the angsty Peter who's like, so you're not my dad, and I'm angry with you now. Like, I was glad that in this, you know, we saw, I was like, oh, you know, there's finally that semblance of family and, you know, I really like that.
And I also liked Peter's, like, pronoun confusion for a little bit when he's talking to Walter in it, where he's like, your world, I mean our world.
Right.
Right, yeah.
But he's picked his world. He's picked which world that he belongs to, so, yeah, that was all good. All right, so let's wrap it up. Next week, we're going to have lots of finales, so hopefully some of you guys will be back for next week. Because I think almost everything is finaleing out next week.
Yeah.
So, big news.
Vampire Diaries is your Supernatural finale, or was that it?
No, I think it's next week is Supernatural.
I think it's next week, yeah.
So we're going to have lots of finales to talk about. That's all good, so looking forward to that. And if you have any feedback, remember you can send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @tvcampfire. We're on Facebook. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.